All right, everybody, welcome back to The Human Occurrence. I would first off like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, past, present, and future. Our guest on the show today is Jared Dehar. Now, Jared has just moved to the Byron Bay area from Melbourne, and we're going to be discussing everything authenticity, integrity, and purpose. This is a really potent episode, and I think there's going to be a lot of value in there for men that are transitioning into their internal game, into the self-development game, and especially women too. So buckle up as always, guys. This is going to be great. Here we go. Have you ever been to Japan, bro?
No, I haven't, actually.
Oh. You haven't.
That's definitely on the to-do list. That I've always wanted to go to Japan. Actually, I've just never got around to going there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country, man. I used to live there, and you know, it's one of the safest countries. It's without a doubt the most efficient country I've ever been to in my life.
Japan.
Yeah, man. They're just timelines and everything is just like. You order your food, you know, 3.5 minutes later, whack, it's there. Whack, there's another waiter there wanting to, you know, serve you. It's a really, really beautiful, it's a really cool country. And it's fucking clean, man. It's clean. I used to live out of vending machines, bro. And and it was healthy. And
yeah,
it was
cool.
Like the variety in it was crazy. You know, you could buy like, you could, to the extent of vending machines there, basically, you could buy suits. You could buy socks. You could buy fucking anything, man. Anything.
All in the vending machine.
All in the vending machines, bro. So, yeah. Definitely, definitely go. Oh,
there we go.
Hey, is that, that's Alice in Wonderland, man.
Yeah, man. I was just had at this tea party with this pretty crazy dude.
What kind of tea?
Yeah, I had some pet animals that spoke, and I thought I was a bit fucking... But,
Was it the tea you were drinking, or was it that herbal mushy tea?
Well, let's just say it was not only the fluid, it was also the food.
Hey, bro, how you enjoying Byron?
Byron is a blessing.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, especially coming from, you know, being in a concrete city for a while, and then before that being in a really huge city, I was in Toronto, Canada for 2 years.
Right.
And it's the biggest city in Canada, right? So there was like millions of people. And so to come back to a place now where it's just sunshine, like I wake up to the sunrise overlooking the beach every single day of my life. It's such a blessing, actually, especially in the current climate in the world today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm in a place where I can go down to the beach every morning, see the sunrise, and then just, you know, go half an hour trip, and then I'm out in the forest. And
yeah, it's really diverse here. I think that's why a lot of people like get attracted to the area. Was it always a part of your plans? Like, I know that you, how long have you been with Shaney for now?
Just over a year now.
Yeah. So yeah. Was that just introduced as you were, getting to know Shaney and obviously, oh, my fucking staff are calling me. Was that introduced while you like getting involved with Shaney? It was like, hey, my plans are to move north. Are you interested in it? Or did you have prior interest to Byron or?
No, I had prior interest. So when I came back from Canada, I actually landed in Kingscliff.
Yeah, right.
Which is, that's considered to be, oh, it's New South Wales.
Yeah. It's right on the border.
Yeah. But the only reason why I left there was no work, you know?
Right.
It was kind of, oh, you have to go up to Queensland or come down here. And at the time I was like, you know what, maybe like, let's give Melbourne a shot. And a good friend of mine was living there at the time in the film industry because my background is the film industry. So he's like, yeah, man, you should get out here. So moved to Melbourne. You know, Melbourne, typical city.
Yeah.
You know, they have what they consider to be a beach, which is not a beach. It's like,
that's in Kilda?
Yeah.
Well, I guess once you experience it like a beach of, you know, Byron's variety, then it's kind of like a drop in the ocean, right?
Yeah, most definitely. And before I went to Canada, I was living in Perth. Now, I know Perth has its, you know, rap, but the beaches there are amazing also. So it was always destined that way. And when I was in Melbourne, that's when I, just before I met Shaney, actually, the friend who I was living with was like, hey, man, like, I'm looking to bounce back to Queensland, film industry there. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, cool. Why not? I've had enough of this place. Let's bounce back there. Then I met Shaney. And then through that process, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to stay here a little bit longer. And then turns out Shaney was like, look, I'm from New South Wales, you know, in Queensland. And I'm, what are your thoughts on moving back there? So I was like, just everything aligned. Well, I was like,
it all made sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was going to happen regardless. It was just perfect timing that Shane was also in the boat to go there as well.
Yeah, yeah. Have you connected with much of the community yet? I know it's pretty early days.
yeah, not really. It kind of yes and no. You know, obviously still living in COVID, people are a bit like apprehensive to kind of gather and stuff.
Yeah,
because they're not. You know, when it's kind of like fighting against their sovereignty, they're like, nah, let's all just go and run rampant. And yet you can sit in the restaurant and you see them being like, oh, you're a bit too close to me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I know. That's you know, I think, you know, Byron's a special place. It kind of like, it really attracts people with a lot of purpose in some degree, and that inner connection. I find, you know, Byron for me in the last 14 years, because I've been here for 14 years, it's it's rapidly changed. And it's something I definitely want to get in with you about, and ask you some questions about. But first of all, man, I really want to start off with ground zero with you, because I haven't really dissected your story yet in terms of where you've come from and to where you are now. But I really want to open that box with you. So if you do you mind if you talk into that a bit for me from where it all started?
Yeah, sure. So originally I'm from New Zealand. I was born in a place called Hamilton, which is the center of the North Island. Born into a big family. I'm second eldest of 13.
Wow, bro.
Yeah. Wow. So I've got 8 sisters, 4 brothers.
Wow.
Your parents and I grew were busy. Up was, well, no TV back then, right? Like, what else did you have to do? So it was like, oh, let's find other means and other ways to entertain ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that happened. Yeah, and so growing up, I grew up in what's considered to, you know, like I call it the hood, you know, and I know that terminology gets thrown around a lot, but we grew up in a very poor area.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over the years, we moved a lot, and it went from different kind of areas. and then, ended up moving to Australia to get away from New Zealand, and then decided to spread out and travel the world, and then ended up living overseas for a bit, and now I've come back to Australia.
Yeah, right. And what sort of relationship do you have to your parents? Are you still in contact with them? Are you close? Are you not close?
No, so to add on to what we were just talking about, like, I grew up in a pretty dysfunctional household. Like, I had a father who, whether you're a man or woman, would address you if you were out of line, or if he felt, you know, that you were out of line. He was a very domestically abusive man. Very beautiful man, though. You know, he was still a great man, but had the old school paradigms of real men don't cry, and you know, you rule with an iron fist, kind of. That was his thing. My mom, due to that, wasn't in my life to my early teens. She was around here and there, but she didn't really have much to do with my life until my early teens. Also, I had a stepmother that my father was with, who was one of the most cruelest women I've ever met in my life, and a very, very dysfunctional human being, and still to this day is. So, and then I had a stepfather, bless his soul, who I didn't get along with when I was younger, because he saw me as a splitting image of my father. And so I reminded him of what my father put my mother through. Mm. And so my relationship was fragmented with him too, because I felt that. And then, you know,
yeah.
Am I in contact with him now? Not really, to be honest with you. I don't really associate with much of my family at all.
Mm.
Not to say that I don't love them, you know, and people have this idea when I say that, they're like, oh, you know, you mustn't love your family. Or when I speak about my family in a loving manner, they're like, oh, how could that be when you're not in contact with them? And it's just one of those things where, because I grew up without them, I learned to live without them.
Mm.
And so I'll speak to them maybe once a year, maybe twice a year. You know, now that I'm getting a lot older, and especially going through my spiritual journey and the path that I've been walking for a while, I've been in a lot more contact than normal.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
And do you think your relationship with your dad, do you think he was reflecting what was going on with his father and that relationship?
Most definitely. I think also, again, like the thing we've got to realize is everyone has a different journey. You know, even our parents, we look at our parents and sometimes we think that, you know, they're not human. Mm. You know, they didn't go through things. They're just mum and dad. And it's like, you know, before you popped out and came into their life and kind of rocked it and changed it around, they had their own life and their own traumas, their own demons, their own life path that they took. And so with my dad, it was the same thing. You know, like I understand certain aspects of it. Like my grandfather was a pretty hard man. He was a typical Māori kind of, you know, again, that staunch kind of proud, prideful man.
Yeah.
And yeah, the link there was distorted, I think.
Right. And were they from the same town that you grew up in? Like is your family lineage around the same town?
Yes. So in Māori culture in particular, for your audience, people who don't know, in New Zealand, we belonged to tribes. And so our tribe belongs to a particular part of New Zealand. And so there's multiple tribes throughout New Zealand of the one culture.
Yeah.
And so I'm from the Waikato region, which is basically, again, the center of the North Island.
Mm.
And we have a homestead there. We have our own, it's called a marae, which is basically a family gathering place in New Zealand, where we go to celebrate anything from birthdays to deaths to just important monumental moments. And we also have our own burial grounds, stuff like that.
Yeah, awesome, man. That's it's rich in culture. It's something that hasn't been too ingrained in me. You know, I had an upbringing which was in some, you know, some could say it was kind of seamless. And there wasn't huge amounts of trauma, or, you know, there was some trauma there, but not huge amounts. So, you know, I'm really interested in culture and how all that works. Yeah, so it's great to hear that that's rich in you, man. And you know what? The first thing when I met you, when I first met you, Jared, I was like, "Fuck, this guy's really purposeful," you know. And I just felt you were solid. I thought, you know what? If shit was hitting the fan, I could imagine Jared would be there, you know. And I think that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, your culture to, you know, all these experiences that you've had from, you know, the trauma, the abuse, all this sort of stuff has really transformed you in a way where you are the man today that you are. I think a lot of people don't really kind of react in that way. Sometimes they can kind of, you know, fall into like a victim mentality or don't really use those lessons. Would you say that, you know, those experiences in your life in terms of your younger years, were they the most potent teachers to this day for you?
Yeah, most definitely. I think all the experiences that I had, and again, we briefly touched on only my childhood stuff, you know, through my teens, I became a very dysfunctional human being. And during this whole period of time, it basically was, I was a victim, actually. You know, I was like, why doesn't anyone love me? What's wrong with me? And and then I started lashing out, and then I started associating with people. I ended up affiliating with gangs and stuff. I wasn't a gangster, but I was definitely a wild child who got very, at the time, didn't realize I got manipulated purely off of that fieriness and that courageousness to kind of dive deep in and do whatever that was suggested to me, you know, in the pursuit of what I considered to be brotherhood, right? So a lot of the experiences I went through before my 20s was the victim mentality, and it was searching for love and searching for people to kind of just acknowledge me. I'm here, you know, like I'm a cool dude. I'm an awesome person, and why not me, you know? And it wasn't until my 20s where I kind of had to reshape that and look at that and be like, you know what, I don't want to be a victim anymore. I don't want to have these excuses to be like, well, this is the reason for my dysfunction and I'm this way because of this. It's like, yeah, cool, that was the foundation for this dysfunction. But now that I'm old enough to take decisions and make decisions for myself, it's no one else's responsibility but my own to change my circumstances.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where a lot of people, they don't make that conscious shift from victim to victor. You know, I read this thing being like, there's two types of people in the world. There's victims and victors. And what that is a victim is someone who always finds problems to every single solution. And yet a victor is someone who finds solutions to every single problem. And it wasn't until I switched into that and started taking responsibility for myself that not only did my life change, but also my psyche changed, and kind of all the elements that I developed during this time, like loyalty, being honest, like brutally honest, where some people, like, you're very abrupt. I'm like, no, I'm just brutally honest, you know, and it makes people uncomfortable, you know? So all these kind of things that I was developing during this dysfunction transferred over when I actually started becoming a more functional person. And a lot of the value systems and a lot of the principles I transferred over now kind of make me who I am
as a whole. So what would you say to someone that is in a situation in their life where they're trying to get out of that victim mentality, but they don't necessarily have the awareness around it? What like, do you seek help? Do you go see someone? Do you see someone like yourself? Do you, you know, self-discover? Do you start to really work on yourself? What would you say to someone that doesn't really have that inbuilt awareness that goes, hey, you know, this is actually playing out in a victim mentality. I want to switch this around and put the power back into my own hands.
Yeah. There's different various variable factors, actually. You know, like, I did all mine myself. I never had strong mentors around me, particularly men. You know, I had a lot of dysfunctional people around me, and it was through my own self-discovery. It's through my own reading and to be honest, purely it got to a point where I was like, I want to change. Like, it's my responsibility. Yeah, my parents birthed me, and, you know, and they raised me to a certain point, but after that point there was no one else to take responsibility and blame but myself for everything that I was doing. And I was doing some pretty dumb shit, you know. And so my advice is, like, you know, it depends. How quickly do you want to expedite it, really, this process? Reaching out to someone, you know, finding a mentor even, or finding a group of people that you can sit and be your most brutally honest with, and they can actually hold you in that and not judge you, but also pull you up when you need to be pulled up and be like, hey, man, you know, like, you slap you around the ears a little bit and be like, no, that's not the right thing to do, you know, from a place of love, though, That's what I mean. Everything has to come from a, like, I've had some harsh conversations with people, and I've started that with, like, this is coming from a place of love. It's not coming from a place of judgment. I'm not trying to say I'm better than you. I know more than you, and I've experienced more than you. This is coming from a place of, hey, man, I see this is affecting you in this way. And if I were to give you a piece of advice, it's up to you. You either take it or you don't. This is a reflection. This is what I see.
And energetically. So,
but also with that, there's also plant medicines. You know, there's different forms of being able to reach out and explore if you do have these traumas, you know, and some of these traumas, yeah, you can go to a therapist. For some people, therapy works. For some people, all when they're in their mind, they're like, yeah, therapy works. For other people, it doesn't. For other people, it's like embodied. And then sometimes that's where plant medicines can come in, because it aligns your body and your mind together. And then there's other people like mentors and coaches who, they're not there to fix you. They're there to empower you. They're there to give you the tools necessary to look at yourself and go in and start doing the surgical work on yourself, from yourself, not having to rely on someone else, and just being able to be given some guidance to be able to dig within yourself to do it. And so for me personally, growing up with what I did, just for me, it was me. I had to take responsibility for it.
Yeah, well, that's
so many different options, you know.
That's potent. For me, you know, I had to really change the group of people I was hanging out with. Because in Australia, banter is massive. You know, so, you know, instinctively for me, I was repeating patterns off my dad, where genetically I would just close as a man. I would just, like, genetically just want to close. That was my normal feeling reaction. So I had to really show up for myself on a lot of different levels to actually practice to get myself open. But what I found was, is that the group of people that I was hanging around with, there was just so much fucking goddamn banter with it. And it's amplified to an effect now where men find it hard anyway to be open, but how they connect is really toxic, because they're just like, oh, you know, you got fucking long hair, or you got a big nose, or, you know, that's how they connect. So it was like, you know, I had to kind of reflect and go, hey, do I really want to be around these people? You know, it's not that I don't love them, but I'm just not growing, and I want to fucking sort my shit out before I have kids and I pass those fucking habits on, or whatever those old conditions are, onto my kids. And that was kind of where I stood back, you know, when I was younger, and when, you know, I need to change the group of friends. So I think that whoever's listening, maybe, you know, that could be an option. But I definitely think, man, there's so many gifts on working on yourself. And yes, it is. So it, for me, it doesn't get, it gets a little bit easier, but it's still really fucking confronting. Like I'm working on myself, obviously, still. And some weeks I go, fuck, like something massive happens. And I'm like, fuck, am I actually, it feels like I'm going two steps forward, you know, three back. But once you start moving through it and you've got clarity, awareness, and more self-love, for me, it's so rewarding to get past it and go, wow. And then you've got this awareness around of, like, no, it doesn't disappear, but when it comes up again, you're like, oh, this one, this little chestnut kind of a thing.
Definitely. I feel, just to touch back on what you were saying about the group of people you surround yourself with, you've also got to understand that a lot of other people aren't on a spiritual journey. They aren't on a growth, a personal development growth journey. And some of the people there, their behaviors are actually unconscious. You know, they're not there deliberately trying to upset you, but because of, like you said, the culture we live in and the banter, it's like, oh, you know, you're like a piece of shit. And it's like, well, dude, that's actually affecting me. And it's like, you know, for them, they're just like, oh, you know, you're just taking the piss, you know. And it's actually it's not. And so when you have a particular person who is the kind of like the person within the group that stands out, or, you know, and it's like, hey man, nah, like this just isn't cool. If the other people aren't on board with that too, you're going to get the whole rest, the rest of them with that banter being like, oh, you know, shut up, and you're weak, and you're whatever. And then you disassociate from that, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, you know, why are you being that way? It's like, dude, I told you this is, that's not cool for me. And I think it comes down to your boundaries. I think it's your own integrity to yourself to be like, you know what, dude, you're my friend, but I won't put up with this. I've told you, I've expressed to you that I'm not good with this and you continue to do it. And I'm not actually going to sit here and be like, okay, well, you know, I'll just put up with it. No, the integrity in myself says, hey man, that shit's not cool with me. I've expressed it to you. You obviously don't respect what I'm saying. So now I'm going to bounce over this
way.
You know, and it's the reality of it, you know? And it was like you said with the personal development stuff, I still slip back into some old patterns, subconscious patterns of behavior that I'll be like, no, this is what I think. And then like an hour later, I'll be like, that's not actually how you think anymore. Mm. It's not. And so I'll go back and I'll actually, the way I correct that and I create that change is I'll go back and be like, look, I'm sorry for what I just said to you before was it's an old paradigm. It's an old way of thinking that I no longer think. But it just naturally within the moment in that reaction it came out and I was like, that's actually, and then when I reflected on it I was like, that's not the way I think. And that's what personal development is. It isn't I'm just going to do this and then tomorrow my life has changed completely. You know, this is a forever staring at yourself in the mirror and knowing yourself, seeing every single little crack and freckle and, you know, all the detail on your face and then seeing it the next day completely different. You know, it's forever changing.
That's true, man. And where do you think men in particular have lost, you know, the way of really embracing and embodying integrity? Do you think that's come from, you know, obviously repeating patterns from their parents, or has there been like a, where do you think that started actually losing that?
Well, that's the thing. Like it's a generational thing, you know, for a while since, I don't know, since when the West developed kind of way that man should be, they've taught bad habits. You know, we've been taught to be a particular way. And because back in the day we were hunter gatherers, you know, we couldn't be sitting there with a spear waiting to hunt something, being all, you know, emotional and stuff. And then something comes along and it eats you. You know, we were like, you had to be on point and very focused and like, come on, we got to get it. And then we started shifting from that to what was considered toxic masculinity, which that is the most dumbest shit I've heard, mum language. There's no such thing as toxic masculinity. There's definitely dysfunctional behaviors of masculinity, but being masculine in all its shapes and forms is not toxic. But it's just like anything, you know, there's dysfunctional behaviors that every single one of us have, can be, you know, feminine energies, masculine energies. And then we went from a shift though. We went from a shift from, okay, well, being this particular type of masculine man isn't good. And so we went right to the other spectrum of being now in our feminine, you know, being a, like, what people are throwing around toxic femininity kind of, you know, and being too gentle and too loving and not being in your purpose and not being driven and being like, yeah, like a go-getter and out there kind of providing for the family and stuff like that. And then that in itself, both of them have its gifts and its curses, you know, they both serve its purpose. What I feel now is with integrity, because we didn't have it. And then when we tried to get it, we kind of put it in a basket that wasn't actually integral at all. And so now trying to come back to the middle and having both of these qualities, both of these energies within us, and to be able to be discerning with kind of like what we decide to, what energetics we decide to bring into, you know, our being and kind of where we sit on that spectrum. Because a lot of people are either hyperly masculine or hyperly feminine, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
you know, need to bridge it and bring it back in the center and be both. You know, this whole real men don't cry, it's actually, well, take away the whole idea of what a real man is. A man cries. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a beautiful thing. However, you don't want to, you know, be a wimpy person who just is always in his hands crying and be, oh my god, life, you know, and it's, and then you also don't want to be like, well, I don't feel anything, so I don't really care, you know, like I'm a tough you know, it's building. And the funny thing was, I was both. Again, I grew up this very soft, gentle kid, this soul being like, you know, just love me. Why can't I be loved? What's wrong with me? And so I was very gentle. And then through my teens was kind of when I lashed out because I was hurt. And I was like, man, fuck the world, my language. But I was like,
yeah.
And then I went to that full extreme of like being a tough guy, well, you know, putting on this armor and, you know, portraying a particular energy that I was at that time. You know, I did go through a rage and kind of like, you know, there was that, I'm so hurt and angry and pissed off at the life that I've been given to me, is that now this is my protection method of kind of showing up in the world. And then in my 20s, because that created so much distortion for me and so much conflict and kind of basically put me at I'm either going to be dead or in jail kind of scenario. It's like, hold on, man, you need to pull away from that. And all this old ways of like real men don't cry and puff your chest out. That's not working. And I've come full circle again, where I'm getting in touch with my emotions and being able to express myself deeply to the people that I care for and that are a part of my life.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is why I think that, we had a good chat once, might've been a month ago or something, about your direction and where you're going and all that. And I thought, you know, what a great example for someone who is seeking what we've just been talking about, right? And to get into that game, they're in a game. But you're a very, approachable and I could imagine that you'd be very like a gateway to that, where I find a lot of men that I've had conversations with about wanting to get into it, they're really intimidated by, fuck, you know, I'd like to work with him, but man, he's a fucking guru. He's like fucking, you know, like knows everything. Yeah. He's enlightened, all this shit. And then on like the other end of the spectrum too. So I think, man, there's obviously, you know, that is a huge market for that, but I think you represent something that's really authentic. I think there's going to be a lot of men out there that you're going to help. And man, I'm so excited for you, bro. It's fucking awesome. When you told me that in the car, I was like, man, I'm fucking, you've got my support 100%, because I just think that you'll do, you'll be a game changer in it. And especially in Byron, because Byron's kind of been flipped on its head in the past, maybe 6 years. And it's hard to walk down Byron in the street now and actually someone, you know, not to brag on them or anything, but you bump into people and they like have this urgency of telling you how it is, how the world's functioning. You know, you might drop a little bit of a hint, oh, my mum died, or this is what I'm struggling with at the moment. And they'll just like pour their way of being on you. No, this is the way.
Yeah.
The way. And that to me is a bit toxic, you know, that for me, you know, my intuition is like, hey man, I don't need, you know, I'm not seeking like 101 answers here off you or the code to what life's about. But Byron's definitely shifted in that way, where the balance is definitely out. It'll be really interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years with it. I think, you know, there's a lot of powerful people doing a lot of powerful work, but someone who can sit in the middle that's really attractive to someone who, you know, you'd call just the normal man, you know, someone who's just like journeying through their life. But I'm really excited for you, bro. And it's fucking potent work. It's great. You're solid as fuck. But so authenticity, here we go. I'm starting to get hot here. I'm getting excited.
Let me just touch on one thing. I just want to touch on one thing you brought up before.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, this idea of being a guru and all this kind of stuff. I'm not that. The truth is I fuck up just like everybody else. But where I differ is I look at my behaviors and then I'll be like, man, what I did there was not good. It's not right. You know, and then most people, when they see that, they shame themselves and they're just like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. And then they go about their business. I don't. I'd be like, man, that's not cool. That doesn't align with me. Mm. So I'll look at that behavior and be like, where did that come from? Mm. And this is what I mean in regards to the work I do. I'm not going to tell you how you should be. That's not what my purpose of what I'm doing is. What I am helping you with is identifying these patterns of behavior that men have, men in particular, I work with women also, but that they have, that they've turned the blinders on to.
Mm.
You know, they don't actually look at why their behavior is that way. And so they just go about it with this. If you create the shift in that, and you can identify that first, and then you can actually address the core kind of foundational elements of the reasons why you're like that, you can create change. Change is hard. You know, change is very hard. And again, I'm still going through it too. Like forever a student, never a master.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all my life I'm going to be learning and I'm going to be dissecting myself. And that's my life's purpose. That's what I've chosen to do for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I had someone when I was younger to be able to mentor me and to be able to guide me and give me this information that I'd never had. So that's that one. And also another one too is the whole approachable thing. It's funny because like we experienced this the other day. I walk down the street and I'm heavily tattooed and big muscular dude, right? And so a lot of people kind of like look at me and be like, oh man, he's a bit intimidating. And then I have a lot of people meet me and they're like, you know what? You're nothing like what I thought you were. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Let's speak on that. Like, what did you think I was?
Mm.
You know? And like, oh, well, I thought this. And I'm like, oh, so you stereotype me, right? And they're like, oh, and it makes them a bit awkward, you know, a bit uncomfortable. Yeah, and I don't mean to make them uncomfortable, but I also wanted to address that and be like, hey, like, that's another area that maybe you could work on, because you're stereotyping someone just because of the way they look.
Mm.
And then you, like, especially with old people, I love it with old people, bro. I'll meet old people that at first they're quite shocked and they're like, oh shit, like what's going on here? Like, oh, I can't get away that fast, you know? And then by the end of it, they're like, you were so amazing. You're such a brilliant, articulate, well-versed young man. And I'm like, thank you very much for that. You know, it kind of brings a bit of joy to me because it's changing their perspective, perception on people who look like me as well.
It's like we're going into default, right, of like just like instant judgment and a projection.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fuck, that guy looks like fucking like he could rip my head off. So,
bro, I was in a cab in Cancun, Mexico on the way to the airport, and it was one of those ones where you pick multiple people up. And so I got picked up, man, and there was just one old lady who must have been like 70 sitting in the back. And when kind of as soon as I stepped in, and I feel this all the time, I feel people's energy, she went, woo. We kind of was like, oh, and then I sat there and I could feel that. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to break this tension. So I'm talking to her. And at first she was kind of like, oh my God, he's talking to me. Oh, you know, and then by the end of it, she was like, you know, you should write a book. Cause I started sharing stories with her. It was like a 40-minute drive. Right. So
yeah.
I started feeling out all these stories and stuff of my life and tattoos, what they mean and where I'm from. And she was like, you're a very, very well-articulated young man and you should write a book. And at the stage at that time, I was like, who would want to know, who would want to read a book about me? And like I tell people all these stories. Well, I get this all the time. You know, I've had a few people say that to me. And at that time, it was before I went on the whole personal development kind of wanting to actually facilitate that for other people. I was just like, you know what? At the time, I was like, no one wants to know about me. These are just my stories. And through that process, I've realized that so many people, when I share these stories, some of those stories I share, they're actually profound for them, and they've changed some of their viewpoints. And it was through that process and the process of people being like, you should be a motivational speaker, you should be a coach, you should be a mentor. And again, I wasn't in that space at the time to want to go down that direction. I was like, nah, I'm still navigating my life. My shit is just as messed up as everybody else's.
Yeah. Was this in Canada or New Zealand or where was
everywhere, to be honest. Everywhere I've traveled, when I've met people, like after the dark period of my life in my 20s, my early 20s, and I made that decision to no longer be that victim, I traveled the world. And that was the best thing I could have ever done in my life, because it allowed me to go and see other cultures and see other people going through the same kind of struggles in a completely different place, and how they've overcome it and how they've thrived, and meeting people. Like, the cool thing yesterday, I went and brought a digital piano.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Oh, dude. So excited. That's another story. But I met the guy there, and like I was just talking to him about what I do. He's like, "What do you do?" And I told him about the men's coaching. He's like, "Oh man, cool." And he shared his story about being an ice addict, and I was like, "Okay." And he's like, "And this ruled my life for a long time. It destroyed relationships. It killed all sorts of dynamics that I had." And I said to him, "You know what got you out of it?" And the same thing, he's like, "I had no one to be able to get me out of it." And it kind of it finally hit rock bottom where I saw the destruction. And I was like, man, like, I don't want this for my life. Mm. And so he completely has changed what he's doing now. And he told me, because he's doing a particular type of, he's doing neurophysics.
All right. Now.
Yeah, so he's studying that, and he's talking about healing people's trauma through tremors and shaking and all this other stuff. And I was like, wow, like, you know, we just aligned through me coming to grab this piano from him. And then I was speaking to him, and it's like, yeah, maybe we could potentially do some work. And he sent me a message afterwards being like, "Bro, you're a great human being, man. I loved our interaction, our conversation. Thank you for it. And thank you for the work you do." And so, yeah, that's kind of,
there's so many beautiful people out there, and there's so many talented people, right? And I'm blown away by that. You know, death has really taught me that. And the more I look, the more I see with it. You know, it's just like so many people, you can never underestimate what one's going through. Or you can never underestimate the talent of humans, because we're so individually gifted at so many fucking crazy stuff, man. It's mental. It's so mental. And that's like, that really, it really drives me, you know, that really like fills my cup. And that's just like, gives me so much fucking hope for the world, you know, our community, all of that, man. It's just, it's so cool, man, to hear those stories.
And it's also with that, like, I would love to say that to people, is to stop trying to fit into someone else's box and be you. The world needs whatever magic you have, and a lot of people have that magic until they get criticized, or, you know, until the school system says, "No, we want to develop you to be a worker for someone else, to work for someone else," to, you know. And it's like, well, actually, no, you could take your talents and what you'd love to do, and you can make that your life. You know, I wasn't taught that. I grew up wanting to be a musician, and as a musician, my family, music will never put money on your on your table, food on your table, and it diminished kind of my passion for it, unfortunately, to where I was like, man, if I had stuck with that, you know, like, people meet me now after not being doing what I've been doing for like, you know, 10 years. And they're like, "Oh my God, wow, you should be this." And I'm like, yeah, heard that before, you know? And then it's also one of those things where I'm like, man, people are hearing me now and being like, "Wow, you're amazing at this particular thing." And in my mind, I'm like, this is nothing compared to, one, what I was, and two, where I could have been now. So I love the fact of how you brought that up, that we are so different, we are all so unique, and yet we all try to be like someone else, you know, when the world, what the world needs is more of what you have and your brilliance to be able to bring a depth and richness to our beings, you know. So,
and that really brings me to my next question, is that authenticity. So we just briefly touched on really harnessing one's gifts. Do you think do you think the biggest factor of people not really embracing their true self is from them being hurt?
I think it's from a place of judgment, actually.
Right.
Yeah, like I like this weird little thing over here. If I tell you about it, you're going to judge me. And if you judge me, it then diminishes my confidence in my ability to actually do that or want to do that. Or, you know, and it's that judgment, that criticism. People are so harsh to each other. It's, you know, and again, the thing that changed that for me was when I went to Canada, I saw a completely different side to life that I had never seen before. Yeah, you know, right. Here we say, oh, I'm this, you know, I do this, and people are like, tall poppy syndrome, you know, like, oh, you know, I never did, I wasn't able to make it, so you probably won't neither. And then even if you are really good at something and I wasn't as good as that, I'm just going to be judgmental and be bitter about it and be all salty and be like, oh, you know, like, you're not even that great just because it didn't work for me. You know, I went to Canada and I'd have people like, what do you do? I do this. I'm like, wow, we do that too. Come along over here. We've got this group over here. We're doing over here, man. We can, you know, we will extend our hand to you. It's up to you to grab the hand and come walk with us.
Yeah.
But over here, it's like, man, dude, hands behind the back. Like, there's no help here.
I think, you know, in Australia, we are instinctively judgmental. And I can completely relate to you there, because when I went to the States, I had this, you know, that was ingrained in me too, you know, being judgmental. I was like, oh, you know, people from the States, they're cocky. You know, I just had this fucking story, this silly story that was going on. Anyway, I went to the States randomly to watch the NBA finals with a good mate in San Fran, the best fucking thing I've done in my life. Well, not the best thing, but one of. But what I instantly noticed was the Americans were so behind you and so motivating and so supporting. You know, if I walked down in a pink suit in Byron, they'd probably go, oh, Brent's a poofter, Brent's gay, Brent's this, Brent's Brent's all that. But in the States, if I was to do that, I'd go, fuck, man, that's a sick bloody, you know, outfit. Fuck, where'd you get that from? How much did it cost? Where, you know, all this sort of shit.
So I think tell me about it. Tell me why you're wearing that. What is that about? Give me insight to what's going on there.
Yeah, that's
we're right. Here. It's like, look at this idiot.
Yeah, it's instant, you know, like, instant judgment. And I think you're right, it comes from judgment, but I also think it also comes from being deeply hurt from a young age where you just like get put down. As you said, you know, when you were younger, like going, hey, I want to be a musician. Oh, well, fuck, don't even think about that, Jared. It doesn't bring fucking, what are you fucking crazy? It doesn't bring money to the table, blah, blah, blah. All this sort of shit, you know? But authenticity is just like, when I experience that off someone else, it just energizes me. I just think fucking good. Like that inspires me, you know? It just fucking fills my cup up. And I can't thank someone else enough, really.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. I feel when I'm in the presence of someone who is just them, it actually brings a sense of joy. Like even talking to you about it now, I feel my body being like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like this, that's so good. Yeah. Especially those who are really quirky and really out there and really push the boundaries, you know, and they're actually not doing it for you. They're not doing it to impress other people. They're doing it as their expression of oneself in the purest form of who they can be. And when I talk about authenticity, I'm trying to bring people into being comfortable with who they are and loving themselves for who they are, where they are, what they're about. You know, like I said, every freckle, every dot, every hair, every wrinkle, like, you know, own it. It's you. This is you got one life to live, one lifetime to live it. Live it your way. Why live it somebody else's way? And to be truly authentic, I feel you then draw in authentic people. And don't get me wrong, of course you have all these other people who love and feed off that authenticity, who it's they aren't. But you do find, like, speaking to Shani about this, actually, like, I don't have many friends, good friends. I have a lot of people I associate with, a lot of people I, you know, can call and hang out with, but my true friends I love are like one hand. And they are the type of people who, like, I don't speak to them every day. You know, and actually, you know, the majority of them live overseas. The people I've met overseas, who the richness of who they are, have drawn me into the point where I'm like, man, I love this connection. You will forever be a friend to me. All of those people are very unique in themselves. They're not like me. They don't share the same, they share the same values, but they have different ideas of life. And I love that. And I love meeting people who just are so comfortable within themselves that they're like, you know what, if this doesn't resonate with you, that's okay.
Mm.
If you don't like it, you've got an option of removing yourself from me, you know? And like, that's the way I kind of look at my life. I'm like, this is my world, it's not yours.
Mm.
At the end of the day, the reason why I say that is because at the end of the day, if I don't want you in my world, you won't be a part of it. That's the integrity to myself to be like, you know what? No, you don't resonate with me. See you later. Mm. It's not being rude. It's not being disrespectful. I'm not calling you a bad person. I just don't want you in my sphere.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? On the same token, this is your life. It's not mine.
Mm.
At any stage, you can cut me out. If you don't like my behaviors, you don't need to sit there and put up with it and stick around. And a lot of people do.
Yeah.
You know, they still have these people who like are toxic to them. You know, they drain their energy. They just destroy them on the inside. And they keep them around because that, you know, they want that connection. And it's like, well, you know, if you severed that, you actually give space for people who will come in and like you said, fill your cup.
Mm.
You know?
Well, they're yet to like really drive their internal Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
And get in that car and really embrace it. I also love about, now we're talking about close friends, is that I'm very similar to you. You know, I've got a handful of really, really close people, know a fucking crazy amount of people, but that's it. I love friends where you can sit down and really communicate and connect with them, but you can have different views and not have to, you know, leak your no, I'm right type of thing. But you can go, oh yeah, no, look, I see what you're saying. I don't agree with it, but yeah, that's it. That's what I love, the diversity between connections. And all that. Do you think that one can have if they don't have integrity or authenticity, they're struggling with that, can one have purpose? Or do you think that you need that integrity and you need the authenticity to really have purpose?
To be honest with you, I think the baseline of everything is integrity.
Hmm.
You know, if you think what you think, if you say what you say, and if you be how you are and they're the most aligned to yourself, then the authenticity comes through because you're always doing you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not doing anything that goes outside of you.
Mm.
And so with that brings the purpose. You know, your purpose is then solid. You can't have a purpose to be like, I want to be this way, and yet be like, oh, well, you know, like I want to be that way, but I'm not going to do the work that needs to actually put me in that direction. And, you know, that's what I mean. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, purpose. And it's like, well, without purpose, without integrity, there is no purpose. Mm. Authenticity. Well, you can't be authentic if you're not integral to yourself.
No shortcuts, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think integrity leads into everything. It leads into your relationships, the type of relationships you have. If you don't want to have a particular type of relationship, it's people who stay in these toxic relationships.
Mm.
They're not integral to their own sovereignty and to their own being, that they live in a lie, and then they wonder why, you know, this shit is happening. And again, there's a lot of people who don't live in their integrity. You know, they're not solid in their no. Mm. They're people pleasers, and oh, well, I don't want to ruffle the ship in case you don't like me, because if you don't like me, then I'm going to be alone. That's not true.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, you are alone anyway, because you're in a dysfunctional kind of pattern and relationship that doesn't serve you anyway.
Mm. Yeah, without a doubt. For me, it's definitely like, that's been my, like my internal GPS, my integrity. And it's really governed who I hang out with, whether or not relationships come to me or they break apart or whatever, but my sole purpose is actually to follow that GPS, and that is my integrity. And it's just, for me, Jared, it's so fulfilling. It's just like my body feels like I just love myself so much when I know that, hey, that maybe the chips are down, it's really hard decisions to make or whatever, but I'm sticking to my integrity. At the end of the day, fuck, whatever happens, happens, right? Like, but you're true to yourself, and that's rewarding, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think, like you said, at the end of the day, if you've done everything within your power to stay aligned with who you are, and it doesn't work out, at least you know within yourself that you did everything possible within your means to stay aligned to that. It just didn't work out. You know, failure is the first attempt in learning. Yeah. Like everyone's like, oh, I failed. And it's like, oh, now it's over. It's like, well, actually, no, now that's the beginning. That's something now that you can dissect. Mm. You can look at it and be like, well, why did I fail? What happened here? What was the reasons? Are there behaviors? You know, I always go back of patterns of behaviors and kind of the way you look at things. And the integrity too, you know?
So you just cut out then.
I was just saying, so that way when you're in integrity, you no longer have that victim mentality, you know, oh, I'm blaming you now for my life being screw up through my behaviors and my actions and my thoughts about something that I've projected onto you.
Yeah,
and then, you know, now that's gone wrong. Well, now instead of looking at myself and be like, oh man, I'm to blame here. And even I don't even think blame, you know, I'm the cause for this. So you don't need to blame yourself and shame yourself. You just need to be like, well, you know, what I thought there was wrong, or this particular pattern of behavior doesn't actually serve me. And I feel like the older you get, the more you actually refine that. Well, you know, I have.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I don't know if that's a case for everybody, but
that's what I'm talking about in regards to the work that I do. A lot of people don't, you know, like they don't take responsibility like you and me, and they don't refine it when they're older. And a lot of them, it's just blinkers on, bro. And I'm living life the way that I've been programmed to think.
Well, I could imagine in some cases it'd be really, really confronting and overwhelming for someone's reality, right? To actually be responsible for your life and the decisions and the fuck ups, ins and outs. That's a fucking big, that's a big thing, you know?
It's huge.
And people, you know, I'd imagine people just be like, oh, that's too much to fucking even digest, handle here. So let's just put that in the trailer and just keep moving forward. And we'll just ignore that right now. Let's put a tarp over it.
Yeah. Well, let's numb ourselves and turn a blind eye to it and let it fester over there. And let it, you know,
that's right.
Let it develop five heads instead of the one that you could have addressed.
Fucking goblins in your trailers. Yeah. I have a lot of conversations with people around death, and that is a similar thing. Death. It's like, okay, well, let's talk about that when I'm dying, or let's talk about that when you're dying, or let's talk about that when we've got to talk about that. I just think there's such benefits from, you know, having these conversations, having a seat at your table for death, for inner work, for, you know, taking responsibility for your stuff. Just having a seat at your table for that is such a fucking positive start. Because I tell you what, I know in the death game that if it's not addressed, it can really have some pretty significant repercussions. Emotionally, physically, a whole bunch of stuff. So I can't, you know, igniting people's human potential, man. Really take my hat off to you and all that, man. It's really juicy, bro. It's juicy.
Thank you, brother. Yeah.
Hey,
forever evolving.
Got to wrap it up soon, but I wanted to, before we leave, I wanted to talk to you about jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
Right. Not necessarily MMA, because me and you could talk MMA for literally fucking hours, which we definitely do. Tell me, how did it start and why did you get into it?
So, that's a great question. So during the teens and stuff, and when I started being this delinquent, right, I started putting myself in situations where I had to physically defend myself. Now, you know, when I was younger, I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of, and that through that behavior, I was around people who thrived in kind of this environment. And I thought that was an environment that I wanted to thrive myself. And so initially it actually started with Krav Maga. I went into that to learn knife defense and gun defense, because I was like in the street doing dumb shit, and I was like, oh, I'm going to defend myself through that. And then it wasn't until I met one of my good friends, Kenny, who's actually a stunt performer, who was, you know, I don't want to say typical Asian. I just said it and I shouldn't, but like, you know, he just martial arts, everything, you know, like Taekwondo, Kung Fu, boxing, jujitsu. Like he was just like zoned in on what he was doing for his craft. And when I was in Canada, he was talking to me about it and I was just like, meh, you know, like, oh, you know, whatever. And he's like, dude, you should give it a go. And so when I was in Canada, I actually went rolled. And for the first class I had, I got put up against this tiny, petite little girl. She must have been like, I don't know, 60 kilos.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, 90 kilos. So I was just like, okay. And they're like, oh, you're gonna fight her. And I was like, dude, I don't hit women. Like, that's not my thing. And he was just like, okay. And she was like, okay. And then boom, first round, she choked me out within like 20 seconds, right?
Wow.
From me not defending myself. I was like, okay. And then because it did, it was a hit to the ego. And I was like, this little chick just like tied me in a ball and choked me out. Like, what does it do with that? So I was like, okay, come try that again. You know, like now that kind of the ego kicked in and I was like, I'm not going to attack her, but I'm not going to let her do that.
Yeah.
So boom. Within like 30 seconds again, she's like choking me out, dude. And I was just like, what? And then I was like, so now I'm like, I'm going to physically hurt her. I'm like, I'm going to grab her. I'm going to hold her down. I'm going to do something. Again, she choked me out, dude. Like I must've got choked out like, I don't know, 8 times within the time I had to roll with this girl. And I was, it blew my mind because again, after the first initial times, I actually then started putting my weight into it and like fully trying to be like a bit more aggressive and grabbing and, you know, and she was just like, yeah, I'm not having none of that. Like, and the thing that actually threw me out of it next was, sorry, this is a different one, but there was a husband and wife training, right? And the wife like was doing stuff, and then the husband and the wife got put together, and they were both like high level black belts, right? And then they started doing stuff, and then the dude had his wife on the ground and was fully like striking her, and I was just like, whoa, and like it was really uncomfortable for me at first because I was watching it, being like, man, this guy, I'm just watching this dude beat up his wife in front of all these martial artists who are just like, just keep watching, man. And I was just like, oh, dude, this is... And then all of a sudden, boom, she got him in an armbar after he was, like, beating her up, bro, and then made him tap, you know? And then I was just like, what did I just see here? Like, what just happened here? And then she got up and kind of, like, he was pretty threatening. And I was just like, wow. And then through that process, also, I realized that when I was... when I started doing jiu-jitsu, it put me in a place of being on the verge of being my most primal I can be in a controlled environment. And it allowed me to experience the moment of potentially taking someone's life, but also having the restraint within myself to know that that's not the right thing to do. You know, and it also made me, it's like combative dance for me. It's moving with someone else's body in a combative way and flowing with it and especially they call it human chess for a reason. You're using your mind with someone else in a combative experience. And just to segue into something else, but staying on the same thing, I would encourage people to learn some form of martial art. I really would. Like it's such a beautiful thing to be able to internally look at yourself and express yourself in this combative way, you know, like it connects you with your primal nature. It connects you, it allows you to express yourself with these urges instead of being verbally abusive or you know, being in these states of pent up aggression. And you know, other people do it through dance, so you don't have to necessarily do it through martial arts. But for me, martial arts not only aligned my mind and kind of shifted my perspective on things, but it also aligned with my body. And then it also allowed me to be that really primal, still animal kind of masculine, I guess you could say, energy, and express it in a positive and healthy manner.
It really
in a controlled environment.
Sorry.
Well, in a controlled environment with people around you who they're not there to hurt you neither. You know, you've got some gyms who they're egotistic. Obviously, you know, a lot of good schools don't allow that. They don't allow bullies. People think, oh, you know, these bully there, then know. Mm. Like, you know, they get weeded out quite quickly. And jiu-jitsu actually brought me into a sense of brotherhood as well. You know, it contributed to my healing my pain wounds with men.
Mm. Mm. And I could imagine it'd set up such healthy foundations, right? Like, I think that for my boys, I definitely, number one, I want to get into it, but number two is that for my boys, a form of martial arts or a team sport or an individual sport really sets up positive foundations to move forward, because it's not like, oh, it's all about yourself, or, you know, it gives you, you know, the grid to, a really solid foundation. But the thing about jiu-jitsu that I loved about jiu-jitsu for me is that obviously I fell in love with it through MMA. Mm. But it's just how frequently you get humbled, right? Oh, yeah. Like, fuck, man, we're talking like minutes, seconds, whatever. It's like, nah, you're back to square one. Nah, you're back to square one. Like, and what you said has been forever a white belt, forever a student.
Yeah. And you can't lie on the mat neither. And I don't, no pun intended, not lie, but you know, like you can't mislead here. You've got people who are going out and buying colored belts, rucking up to class and being like, yeah. And then you expose them very quickly, very quickly.
People do that? That's fucking crazy.
People have done that, man. They have done that. And the funny thing is, there's also some schools that promote via you turning up to class. So, I mean, I'm still on my journey of jiu-jitsu, right? Like, mm-hmm. for me, it's going to be continuous. And I feel I'm at a place now where, I know I'm at a place now where I challenge higher belts. And the belt above me, I understand that. But then the belt above me, if I'm challenging that belt.
Game over.
That is a bit of not a red flag, but it kind of is. It's kind of like, hey, man, like, you've been doing this for what, 8 years? And yet I've been doing this for two, and I'm getting the better of you. Look, if I'm challenging them, totally understand. You know, and if they're smashing me, totally get it. But if I'm challenging you after 8 years and I've been doing it for 2 years and you're where you are, you know, that's why jiu-jitsu is the hardest belt system to go through. It's a minimum, well, they say it's a minimum 10 years.
Yeah, right.
You can get a black belt in karate and taekwondo in 2 to 4 years, I believe. I can
relate to that, because I played basketball for 15 years. And we used to get guys coming into the stadium when we used to do scrimmage and whatnot, and they used to be laced up in the new, like, LeBrons, and they used to fucking have all the fancy gear. And I was, and boy, and like, some of the boys would be like, fuck, man, look at that guy. Looks like he can really fucking ball, hey? And I'm like, bro, I'm like, don't even worry about that. Just wait until the bell whistles and we'll find out if he can ball or not.
Yes.
You know, like, forget what he's wearing. Like, you know, I had like fucking 6-year-old boots on and shitty old socks and all that, but I wasn't, you know, that wasn't the point. But you're right, you know, you can't, once the whistle blows, there's no faking nothing, because your true potential, your true skill will come out. But
look, I'll be honest, man, you know, I've met some white belts who have challenged me where I'm at. And then it made me question myself. You know, I'm like, oh, dude. Like,
well, I could imagine that's also like, a natural ability, right? Like, you can just be
natural. Yes, I was just about to say that. Talented. Yeah, well, that was the same with me. When I came in, like, my coach had actually asked me, he's like, oh, have you done this before? I was like, no. And purely it was because I understood the movement of my body. You know, through being an artist, I did dance for a while, and just like the I had a curiosity for movement. I was a bodybuilder for a long time, and all that kind of stuff. So my natural athletic abilities and understanding of how to move my body expedited, my journey. So there's definitely those aspects, but. When it comes to a combat sport, man, you get exposed very quickly, and humbled very quickly. And it's a beautiful thing.
It is, man. There's so much beauty in it, and art in
art.
Fucking oath, bro. That's what I was blown away by. But you know, especially like researching the Gracie brothers and all that, I'm just like, holy moly, man, this is like blowing my mind.
Well, there's even different philosophies, you know, like how you were saying, you know, you want to teach your kid, your boys to go into team sport and it's not about them. Well, actually, there's a different philosophy where you can actually zone into yourself so much that you start understanding yourself so much better in a group environment. You know, you're no longer a part of the group, you're an individual within the group of the group. it's a weird concept. Like it is,
but it makes sense.
You're able to individualize.
Hey Jared, thank you so much for coming on the show, bro. I'm really, really happy that you brought your rabbits with you.
Yeah. We need to go back to drinking our tea.
Invite me over, bro. Hey, how can people find you? I'm going to tag you in this, but how can people find you?
Yeah, awesome. So I'm on Instagram. So it's just my first and last name, which is Jared, J-A-R-E-D. Last name, Deha, D-E-H-A-R. It's the same with Facebook as well. Yeah, jump on, have a look, see what you think. And if you guys, if anyone out there, men in particular, who any of this has resonated with them and they want to have a, you know, have a chat to see where they're at and what we can do, then by all means, drop us a message. Even drop us a message, say hey. Like, man, I heard you rambling on that on the podcast the other day, dude. Like,
fucking ramble together. Let's ramble together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you showing up, bro. And I'm really excited for you. And I'm also really excited for us because I really want to, put the effort into building a relationship with you.
Yes,
bro. So I've got a tapas plate ready for you. I also want you to wrestle and humble me. I know you fucking will. I just...
It's funny because even when you were saying it before, I was just like, I was going to be like, dude, I'll give you your first choke, bro. Oh, like,
No, I'm down with that. I'm down with it. I'm down with it, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Enjoy
Thank
the rest
you very
of
much for having me on the podcast, brother.
Oh, pleasure, man. We're going to... This is the first of many. I want to do an MMA one with you, bro.
Whoa! Nice.
All right, brother. Have a great day, man. We'll talk soon.
You too.
All right, bro.